Hello there, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It is Monday, October 21st. It's a beautiful day in the capital city, and we've got a great show. We're going to get an update on CBJ activities with City Manager Kim Kiefer. We'll find out what's going on with Glacier Valley Elementary and Thunder Mountain High Schools. Ryan Canero will be talking about the Artisan School Project. We'll get a preview of Wednesday's presentation on astronaut humor at UAS, and we'll be talking to Tongass Biomass Coordinator Bob Deering and Andrew Hayden of Wisewood, Inc. about a biomass presentation sponsored by JEDC tomorrow night. All that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez from Fairbanks, Alaska. Alaska Native elders and youth from across the state are discussing what it means to be a modern ancestor. They're gathered here this week in the Golden Heart City. From KUAC, Emily Schwing has more.
This year's is the 30th annual gathering of Alaska Native elders and youth. Greg Bringhurst is the communications manager for Tanana Chiefs Conference in Fairbanks. He says the purpose is to bring many generations of Alaska Natives together to discuss various issues.
The important issues like culture, values and language, health, wellness, safety, land, law and policy, leadership, education, and kind of anything that's a current event right now for Alaska Natives and Alaska.
The conference is hosted by the First Alaskans Institute. It's an organization focused on community engagement and leadership for the future. Lessa Peter is a communications assistant with the Alaska Native Corporation Doyon Limited. She says elders and youth representatives will come from all over the northernmost state.
These are people that are representing their villages and their culture and where they're from and how they find it important to be connected with their elders and their culture.
Organizers expect at least 800 participants to take part in 3 days of workshops and discussions. The conference is followed by the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention at the end of the week. AFN is the largest gathering of Alaska Natives for the year. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
In Canada, Native protesters clashed with police last week during a demonstration against shale gas development in Rexton, New Brunswick. First Nations leaders are concerned about fracking and Aboriginal rights. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
We want to do it in peace!
The demonstrators, most of them from the nearby Asabaktak First Nation, responded by throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails. Police then used pepper spray and non-lethal beanbag rounds. When it was over, 5 police cruisers were destroyed, left smoldering. 40 protesters were arrested, faced with an assortment of charges, including weapons offenses, uttering threats, and failing to obey a court injunction. The former chief of the Asabaktak First Nation, Susie Levi Peters, was one of the protesters.
Everybody is called and told that RCMP went into the compound with their guns drawn and everything, and everybody got into a panic, and the community went down there.
The natives want to stop fracking or seismic testing for shale gas in the region. They say the tests aren't safe for the environment. Sympathy protests also took place in other parts of the country. First Nations blockaded a road in another part of New Brunswick. They also took to the streets in downtown Winnipeg. Industry supporters say shale gas offers a clean alternative to coal-fired energy plants. A recent report suggested there's enough shale gas in the province to wipe out the province's debt. New Brunswick's premier said he is troubled by the violence and his government will do everything it can to achieve a peaceful solution. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe in Nevada is using a U.S. Department of Justice grant to address domestic violence. $800,000 will help fund a full-time domestic violence police officer, legal advocate, and address other needs. Victim Services Program Coordinator Mary Dodd says the tribal shelter will also benefit.
So our shelter is here so that the kids can continue going to the school that they're, you know, accustomed to going to, plus the family support is still there.
Dodd says she's been impacted by domestic violence.
My mother died when I was going on 8 years old from domestic violence. My thought was always we need those resources for the victims so that they understand that there's other options for them.
The service provides food, clothing, and legal assistance. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. On this day in 2012, Kateri Tekakwitha was canonized a saint by the Catholic Church. She was one of seven officially declared a saint by Pope Benedict XVI during a ceremony in Rome. Known as the Lily of the Mohawks, she was born in the 1600s in present-day New York. She's the Catholic saint of ecology, nature, and the environment. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. He's on the board. It is 3:05 in Alaska's capital city. You are listening to KTOO News and the weather. So the report in front of me says mostly cloudy, but if you look out your window, it is not mostly cloudy. But tonight it's supposed to be partly cloudy. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. And Wednesday, rain likely. We'll take that partly cloudy after this weekend because it is glorious outside, and thank you for sharing your afternoon with us. Let me tell you some things that are going around town that might be of interest to you. GCI technicians will be performing upgrades to cable and internet networks in the downtown Juneau area beginning tonight at midnight until approximately 6 a.m. each morning through Wednesday, October 23rd. Primary areas of work will be from the Douglas Bridge to Centennial Hall and Egan Drive to Cope Park area. Then on Wednesday through Friday, same thing, midnight till 6 a.m., primary work will be from the Aware Shelter on Glacier Avenue out to Blackberry Road. During these hours, subscribers can expect brief interruptions in their service. So if you are burning the midnight oil, you might have a little interruption to your service, but then again, you may not. You never know with those things. So in this studio with me today is Kim Kiefer, a CBJ city manager. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm great. How do you not be great on such a gorgeous day?
It's really...
It is beautiful. Beautiful fall day.
It's been a long stretch.
It has.
Okay, let's not talk about the weather, Kim. I'm thrilled that you're here. I always enjoy you dropping by and telling us about what's going on. So I understand there's a committee of the whole, which is an all-staff assembly meeting work session next Monday.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the committee of the whole is made up of all the assembly, and it's their time to work out things or get reports. So what's on the agenda for next week, next Monday night, is the Disturbing the Peace Ordinance, which has been something that's been to the Planning Commission and to the Committee of the Whole in the past, making some changes to that. They also will have a special, it's called a special assembly meeting on Monday because they actually have to take action on a resolution for bonding that will be going forward for Ock Bay School. So it's selling bonds, and so we need to get the authorization to do that and set the interest rates for that. They also will be hearing a report on subdivisions. As part of the discussion about housing, the builders came back and said, you know what, it would be nice to look at being able to create subdivisions with not necessarily having curb and gutter and sidewalks in every subdivision. So is there a way we can look at something a little bit different? So staff has been looking at different options, and they'll provide that on Monday night to the Committee of the Whole / Assembly, which also at, the Planning Commission will be sitting in with them on that meeting, because it's an area of interest. Both the noise ordinance and the subdivision are an area of interest for the Planning Commission.
So let me ask you a question. So on the subdivision, are you saying that every subdivision in the city and borough has curbs right now?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying as we build new ones, and depending upon where they are, if they're in the urban service boundary area, then they need to be built with sidewalks, at least on one side, and depending upon where they are on both sides. It depends on where the subdivision is and what it ties to.
Okay. And you said, what was the word you used, urban? What was
urban service boundary area.
And what is that?
So that's the area that we have determined that the infrastructure needs to go to. So that's where we take the water service. So if you look, as you drive out the road, you'll go past that sign that says no fire service after this point. It's because that's as far as the water service goes. So that's the urban, that's
service,
the boundary for a fire. And then we also have a boundary, an infill boundary, where we say, let's look at providing these services, all city services in this area. Let's build out that urban service boundary area first before we expand beyond that, because that's where the majority of the population is.
Okay.
So that's, we try to take sewer to that, and so We've got sewer right now that is right on the edge of that urban service boundary area. We're trying to do the infill piece of it. We've worked on extending it out North Douglas, which is all part of that infill, we call it, in the urban service boundary area.
Okay, but it's not specifically to downtown or South Douglas. It's larger than that.
Correct.
Okay, great. Yep. Okay, and then there's a CBJ retreat on October 30th?
There is an assembly retreat on
okay.
October 30th.
No, not the whole CBJ. assembly.
So the assembly will be sitting down to set their goals for the next year. And they do this after every election. And they sit down and they look at what they accomplished over the last year. And they set their goals for the upcoming year. They also do some housekeeping things. They look at the committee assignments and agree on those. They look at the calendar for the upcoming year of when meetings will take place. But the bulk of the meeting will be setting the goals for the next year. What does the assembly, what do those nine members want to get accomplished in the next year?
And is that a full-day retreat?
No, it actually is a half-day retreat. It goes from 8 until noon in the assembly chambers.
Okay.
And it is open to the public.
All right, great, great, great. Okay, and that's October 30th.
Correct.
I have a couple of questions for you. So
okay.
I understand that the CBJ Law Department has recently taken over the services for the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional Hospital. Is that true?
True.
So in the past, what did the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional Hospital do when they needed legal help?
They contracted it out.
Okay.
So they had different contract attorneys to do different things for them. When the city talked to them and everybody's looking at how they can do things more efficiently, it was decided that it would make sense to have the law department in the CBJ provide those services where they could for Bartlett and for the Juneau School District. There's some cases where Bartlett has specialty kinds of needs, and so our city attorney will be working with them to contract with an attorney to meet that specialty need that we can't do. But a lot of the general risk management part of the attorney's work is stuff that already hits our risk management fund, so it makes sense that it's coordinated in one location.
Okay, so the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional Hospital are huge organizations, agencies here in town. What does this mean? Will you be hiring more attorneys?
We'll be hiring one new attorney and one support staff to support that attorney and others in the office. So Amy Mead, the city attorney, determined that the workload is such that they can absorb what the needs are for the school district as well as Bartlett with that additional staff. And still, as I said, especially for Bartlett, have a contract attorney to do some of the specialty needs. And if there's something that comes up that needs a specialty attorney, it's her responsibility to make sure that she gets the right person on board to be able to assist them.
Okay. How big is the law department for the city and borough of Juneau?
I think it's 11. So we'll be adding two more, but I don't have my numbers off the top of my head. It's close to that.
Okay. And what is the time frame for hiring the new employees?
The advertisement should be going out if it isn't already. The hope is to have somebody on board by January 1st.
Okay. And as far as the new attorney, what are you looking for in this new attorney?
Somebody that has had municipal experience would be very helpful. Although Amy will look at everybody that applies and look at their experience, but she would like to get somebody that has more experience working more in that municipal part of things. So that's working with ordinances, working with funding sources, working with the needs specifically for Bartlett or the school district. If there's somebody that's come out of maybe being a dedicated attorney for a hospital someplace else, she could look at that as something that would be beneficial. So definitely experience is the first thing.
Okay. And so the law department is going to grow and the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional are going to fold into that law department. And then also, what is going on as far as HR? I've heard that Bartlett is folding their HR needs into CBJ's HR department. Is that true?
It is true. The HR director at Bartlett has left, and so once again, they're looking at, is there a way to try and save money for us? And there's a lot of shared services already with Bartlett staff. Our health care plan is the same. Once again, our risk plan is the same. And so they want to work with our HR director, and the HR director right now is trying to determine how that looks, what kind of staff will need to be brought in. Are they brought in on CBJ side? Are they brought in on the Bartlett side? Where will they work? And with the goal of trying to have people be able to go in both places, so you've got redundancy, and people can shift as you need to for special times, to bring people on so they know the skill set that's needed and the specialty that's needed at Bartlett and the specialty that's needed at CBJ.
Right. And how big is the HR department at Bartlett? Do you have that number?
I don't have that number.
How big is the HR department at CBJ?
Well, the HR department at CBJ also includes our risk manager, our wellness coordinator, and our safety officer. So we've got 8 people plus, yeah, you're asking me numbers that I don't have to talk about.
That's okay.
No,
I'm just curious because Bartlett is obviously a really big employer, as is CBJ. And in closing, let's deal with the relationship with CBJ and the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional Hospital, because they're all connected, but can you explain how they are connected?
Sure. They're all CBJ. Them are us.
Okay.
So if you look at the big umbrella of CBJ, underneath that big umbrella of CBJ, and so that big umbrella, the assembly oversees that big umbrella. Bartlett and the school district both have boards underneath that, but they are part of the CBJ. They have independent boards that they hire and fire their own CEOs. They set their budget. The assembly approves the budget as a total number, but not into the specifics of where the money is spent. And it all feeds up to the assembly. Similar, we have Docks and Harbors that has their own board that the assembly appoints. And they have their own budget, and the difference with Docs, well, actually it's similar with Bartlett, is they have to pay for their own budget. So the revenues they bring in are what they use to be able to fund their budget, just like Bartlett does. So it's all under that big umbrella. So we have risk that goes through all of that, and now with Bartlett we'll have HR that will go through that, and we'll have the legal piece that will all be together. So we're all looking at it in one way.
Okay, so if I was to ask you how many CBJ employees there were, and I'm not really looking for a number, would that, when you gave me a number, would that include Bartlett and Juneau School District, and would it include Docks and Harbor, or do you kind of parcel them out as you think about CBJ and the subsidiary, or however you, what the proper term is for these autonomous entities?
Yeah, so when I look at the CBJ and the piece that I touch the most, I look at about 600 employees, and that does not include Juneau School District, does not include Bartlett. It does include Docks and Harbors, Eagle Crest, and the airport. But even those that are enterprise boards, those last three are enterprise boards, and they have direct reporting to the assembly. They don't report to me. The school district doesn't report to me, and Bartlett doesn't report to me. So when I look at general government, it's minus school district, it's minus Bartlett, and it's minus the enterprise boards. But we're all part of one big piece. So our leadership team has the Docks and Harbors director, it has the Eagle Crest director, and it has the airport director, all part of that as well.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see a graph how all this works, kind of like a family tree.
And you can see that graph.
Oh, good.
If you go to juneau.org, go to finance, and go to budget, there's an overview of the reporting, basically, of all the different boards and who reports to who.
Okay. Well, great, Kim. Thanks for coming in today.
One other thing can I add?
Of course.
For Monday night's meeting, for the...
Next Monday night,
a week from tonight, it's a joint planning commission and assembly meeting. There also will be a report on the transit plan. So for the last 10 months or so, our consultant has been working on looking at our transit plan, looking at different routes, and so they'll be bringing back recommendations to the Assembly and Planning Commission and ask for some feedback on how to go forward. So if you're interested in transit, Monday night's a good meeting to come down and listen to what their options are, how they're moving forward, and what their recommendations will be.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again. It is 3:19. We'll be back in a few minutes with our next guest.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 21st of October, 2013. It was on this day, 1879, Thomas Edison finally hit on the idea for a workable electric light. People have been trying to make them since the 1820s. They'd chosen the wrong material for the filament. They chose platinum. And Edison tried carbonized cotton thread, a carbon filament that worked very well, and then he came up with a tungsten filament that lasted even longer. One of the effects of the invention of the electric light is that people sleep less than they used to. They used to sleep about 9 hours a night. Since then, it's been about 7.5, and sleep researchers show that if people are deprived of electric light, they'll go back to 9 hours a night. It's the birthday of the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, born in Devonshire, England, 1772, author of the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, about a sailor who brings a curse on the ship after he kills an albatross. Coleridge once dreamed of starting a utopian village along the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania, a place where there would be no aristocracy. He was under the influence of the French Revolution. But he never went to Pennsylvania. Instead, he got married to a woman named Sarah Fricker, and the two of them moved to a little house in the country where he had a vegetable garden and where he met the poet William Wordsworth and his sister Dorothy, who liked to take long walks in the nearby hills. And that was where Coleridge came up with the idea for his famous poem. It's the birthday of Ursula Le Guin, the novelist, born Berkeley, 1929. Submitted her first story at the age of 11 to a magazine called Astounding Science Fiction. As of last March, Ursula Le Guin has published 21 novels, 11 volumes of short stories, 4 collections of essays, 12 books for children, 6 volumes of poetry, and 4 of translation. Best known for her science fiction and fantasy, her 6-volume Earthsea series. She gave a commencement address at Mills College years ago in which she said, "Success is somebody else's failure. So I do not wish you success. I don't even want to talk about it. Because you're human beings, you're going to meet failure. You're going to meet disappointment, injustice, betrayal, and irreparable loss. You will find you're weak where you thought yourself strong. You will find yourself in dark places, alone and afraid. What I hope for you is that you will be able to live there, in the dark place." Here's a poem for today, Shakespeare's Sonnet 73, "That time of year thou mayest in me behold." That time of year thou mayest in me behold, when yellow leaves, or none, or few, do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruined choirs where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away, death's second self that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong, to love that well which thou must leave ere long. Shakespeare's Sonnet, number 73. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
At 7 p.m. on October 25th, the zombies will rise once again for the 3rd annual KXLL Zombie Walk. Join us as we stumble downtown to the rendezvous, where there will be prizes for the most bone-chilling costume and a live music lineup that will leave you trembling. Face your fears and join us.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. You are listening on KTOO News Juno, and it is 3:24 in Alaska's capital city. I'm in the studio with Ryan Canero, and he's been really busy. He's been working with the Glacier Valley Elementary kids, 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders, and Thunder Mountain High School kids, 9 through 12, as far as grade. He's been working with 200 kids on puppetry, and there's going to be a show this Thursday at 6 p.m. at Glacier Valley with all 200 kids doing a puppet show. But it's not, I don't think it's a puppet show like a sock puppet. We're talking about 7 classrooms all together building a variety of puppets, including Shadow, Ron, Rod, Bunraku puppets. He's going to correct me in a minute, as well as marionettes. So, Ryan, thanks for taking the time for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joan. I'm glad to be here.
So you are, let's talk from the very beginning. So this is a Rasmussen Foundation Artists in School program.
Yeah, actually, yes. It's through the Artists in Schools program, which is funding from the state legislature, the Alaska State Council on the Arts, the Rasmussen Foundation, and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. So it's administered by the JAC here in Juno, but it's a state program.
Okay. And you've been working with the kids for the last 2 months.
That's right.
Okay. So let's talk about puppetry. You said during the break that you kind of immersed yourself in the puppet world a couple of summers ago?
That's right. Well, I've been working as a theater artist and a teaching artist for quite some time, and I really, you know, dig educational theater and using theater with kids and with teachers as a teaching tool. And it was a number of years, excuse me, a number of workshops with teachers where teachers would ask, have you ever worked with puppets? And I would say, I was hesitant because I knew from a little bit of exposure that it's such a huge world, and it's a very sophisticated world, and I was intimidated by it. So a couple of years ago, I received a grant from the Rasmussen Foundation, an individual artist's grant, which I was very thankful for, and was able to go spend the summer in a couple of different puppetry intensives different venues down south, and sort of just gave myself a crash course that summer. And that was leading up to the following school year, when I spent a big chunk of the year in the Lower Kuskokwim School District in the Bethel area doing a puppetry project with students there. And so kind of just dove in after that summer of training.
And in Lower Kuskokwim, did you have the same age range? I mean, you're dealing with 3rd through 5th graders and 9th through 12th graders here.
Yeah, actually, the LKSD project was K through 12, depending. I was at multiple schools, and, you know, some of them were small village schools.
Yeah, not surprising.
So depending on which school, yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the different puppet forms that we'll see on Thursday at 6 o'clock. So
sure.
What is it all different, like Shadow, Rod, Bunraku?
Bunraku.
Bunraku and marionettes. So what's the difference?
Well, they're each a distinct form. And so basically I sort of gave this menu of possible forms to the teachers. And we agreed that each class is going to make the same type so that their instruction in building the puppets can be shared. You know, so Mr. Wyatt's third grade class all made rod puppets. And rod puppets basically have a rod or a dowel as their spine, and then they have a head and then fabric body covering it, and it's a hand puppet. Bunraku puppet is a Japanese traditional style puppet. It's a very old form, and what makes it distinctive is that it's a full body form. It has arms and legs and head, and so it takes at least 2, preferably 3 puppeteers to operate one puppet. And I think it's a great teaching tool because the students have to collaborate so closely together to even move the thing. And it's really fun to watch them work through their group dynamics to get the puppet to do what they want to do.
And how does that differ from a marionette?
Well, marionette, that's a good question. Marionette can be operated by one person.
Oh, okay.
It's operated by strings, and it has a handle at the top of the strings attached. So it dangles from strings.
Okay.
And the marionettes we made at the elementary level are very simple fabric marionettes. So they look like little ghosts, kind of. They're like little heads wrapped in fabric, and then 3 strings, one for the head and one for each arm of the puppet.
It sounds really complex.
It's been a great adventure, and I have to really hand it to the teachers at Glacier Valley and Barb Meyer, the Thunder Mountain High School drama teacher, because they dove in, and we agreed on this project, and then we met, and they agreed that they wanted to capitalize on my time to teach the performance manipulation of the puppets. So I went in September and sort of kicked off the project, and then left the teachers with my, you know, sort of chicken scratch instructions on how to make these, and the teachers did it themselves with the students without me there. And I came back a couple weeks later with the puppets basically completely built by teachers and students, and we started rehearsing performance with them.
Right. So let's talk about the performance. What will it be? What is it?
Well, it's been a really wonderful collaboration with the teachers there to envision how is this going to be. We've got two schools working together, and we've got seven classrooms, and since this was early in the school year, which is unusual for artisan schools, often these residencies happen later in the year. Someone brought up the idea of focusing on the Glacier Valley School theme for positive school environment this year, which is positive character strengths. And this is a research-based program about what are some sort of fundamental strengths of character that people have to succeed in life and in learning. And they're great juicy words like zest, grit, curiosity. And so they got these words all over the building, and they're going to talk about it at the beginning of the school year. But one of the teachers said, you know, part of the deal with these words is they're kind of hard to define, even for me, to say, like, how do you define the word zest? So we decided to make that the theme of the puppet show. And basically the high school students' puppets are going on a journey, and the whole story is they're on a bus, and they get into an accident. And they wake up in a bad dream, and a voice tells them, each of you is lacking a trait, and you need to go on this journey on the bus to learn about a trait and get the trait so that you can become a better person. And then they'll leave the commons of this Glacier Valley School and actually travel from classroom to classroom, and each classroom is focusing on one of the seven character strengths. So they'll go to Mr. Wyatt's room and they'll learn about curiosity, and one of the high school puppets will suddenly, sort of a Wizard of Oz-ish kind of thing, like, you know, get that trait.
It sounds great. Who wrote this?
We did. It was a collaborative. Yeah, I guess.
You and 200 kids wrote it.
Yeah, we sat down, you know, we had a cup of coffee. I think each of the elementary classes has focused on these
one
abstract
character.
Stories about mm-hmm. curiosity.
Oh, wow.
Abstract stories about each trait, basically. And it's really, they're conceptual. They're little movement ideas about how do you play self-control and show that and define it. As sort of a moral for the high school puppets. And it's the high school students that we did spend more time on, like, what's this framing device for this whole concept?
Oh, the bus concept.
Yeah,
right.
They came up with the bus.
So they came up with the frame, and then each of the individual elementary school classrooms came up with their segment.
Exactly.
Oh.
So the elementary schoolers this week are just having the aha of, like, oh, we connect to a bigger picture.
Welcome to the theater. This is what Tech Week is.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that sounds fabulous. Okay, so I know you've been really busy with this. It's Thursday night, 6 p.m., Glacier Valley. You've been involved with so many different theater projects. Can we get a little preview of what's next?
For me personally?
Yeah, after you
sure.
Take a deep breath after working with 200 kids.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I'm really excited. I'm headed to New York on Sunday after this project comes down. And I'm working with a company there called Theater Me Too, which is a company that I met the director of here. His name is Ruben Palindo, and he directed The Raven Odyssey at Perseverance 6 or 7 years ago now, and that's how I met him. And I am working on a project with them that we're workshopping for a brief. We have basically a company retreat coming up, and then it's an off-Broadway run of a show in January in New York. So getting ready for a project with them, which I'm eager to dive into.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, congratulations, and thanks again for joining us. And just once again, I want to say that the Glacier Valley Elementary School students and Thunder Mountain High School students, not all of them, but seven classrooms of them, will be performing this puppet show 6 p.m. at Glacier Valley on Thursday. I think it's something that needs to be checked out. Thanks, Ryan, for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Every time you look at me, I'm as helpless as can be. I become a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. All you do is touch my hand, and your wish is my command. I become a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. If you really love me, darling, please be kind. I offer you the truest love that you will ever find. Take my heart and please be fair. Handle it with loving care. For I'm just a puppet on a string. You can do most anything with me. If you really love me, darling, please be kind. I offer you the truest love that you will ever find. Take my heart and please be fair. Handle it with loving care. For I'm just a puppet on a string, and you can do most anything with me. You can do most anything with me.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:36 p.m. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm your Monday host. Pat Moore sat in for me last week. Thank you, Pat. I'll be sitting in for Pat this Friday. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. He's running the board. And in the studio right now is Christina De La Rosa and Steve Kosis. They are the people behind the Marie Drake Planetarium. And tomorrow night at UIS Egan Wing 112, Christina is going to be doing a presentation. It's a collaboration between UAS and Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium, and it's astronaut humor. Thanks for coming in today, Christina and Steve.
Sorry to correct you, Joan, but actually it's Wednesday night.
Oh, thank goodness. It's Wednesday night. I'm sorry. Wednesday, UAS Egan Wing 112, and it is a collaboration between UAS and Marie Drake. So how did this collaboration come about?
Well, I'm teaching an astronomy class at UAS, so I coordinated with Margaret Reed there to outreach to the Valley, because usually we do our planetarium shows here downtown, so we thought we'd do a show in the Valley.
Oh, that sounds great. So what time is it?
It's at 7 o'clock.
Okay, so let's talk about astronaut humor. What can we expect when we go?
You can I started out just coming up with funny things about astronauts, but then I thought maybe I better make it a little bit educational, because the purpose of the Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium is to have astronomy education. So then my theme kind of came to be the qualities that you need to be an astronaut nowadays.
Is it humorous? I mean,
yes, it's a humorous take on that, the different qualities you need.
Okay. All right, and you did a similar talk at the Marie Drake Planetarium earlier this
year? Yeah, I did. We do a show every last Tuesday of the month at 6:30 at the planetarium, and when we do that show, we also always use our star ball that we have at the planetarium to show what the stars would look like that night if it was a clear night. But since we're doing, and I did this show in September, that show, but for the one at UAS, we don't have the star ball, so Steve will briefly mention a few things astronomically that are going on, but the main part of the show is the astronaut humor.
Okay, great. I have a few questions for you, and then I have a few questions for Steve. So astronaut humor, obviously, if you're doing a talk about astronaut humor and you kind of dug into what does it take to be an astronaut, what do you need, where did your fascination about astronauts come from?
Well, I actually have an astronomy humor website, so I cover every single aspect of astronomy, space travel, astronauts, NASA, black holes, everything. But astronauts I got interested in, and I was thinking about animal astronauts, and I started thinking about astronauts. And then I was just kind of thinking that we don't really have very many people that we really look up to anymore. A lot of people don't really respect our politicians, for example. But I just thought astronauts are just one thing that probably pretty much them and firefighters we really look up to. So they're kind of a role model, and kids still want to grow up and become an astronaut.
Okay. So you mentioned that website. What is the URL on that website?
My website, which is nothing to do with the planetarium, it's a personal website, is astronomyhumor.com. And the planetarium website is astronomyhumor.org. And we are actually run by a nonprofit board, and Steve and I are two of the board members. But we have other volunteers and other board members who are also involved.
Great. Thank you for clarifying the difference between your website and the planetarium and how the planetarium is run. That was really helpful. So, Steve, astronomy professor over there, it looks like it's going to be a clear night tonight. What should we be looking for?
Well, the moon is going to be out right after sunset. It's a waning gibbous moon, and actually I'm a temporary assistant professor of astronomy, so I'm not anywhere near a full title.
But you are the professor of astronomy in this studio right now.
Yes, but very temporary. Yeah.
Okay, anything else we should be looking up for?
Well, Venus and Saturn and Mercury are all visible after sunset. However, you have to have a clear western horizon, which is difficult to find here in Juneau. I'm trying to think right now where's a good place to have a clear horizon, and you'd have to be out in open ocean, I believe, right now to see it. And also, early in the morning, if you're up, Saturn's visible early in the morning, so is Mars, but you'd have to be up, though, after midnight to see that. And let me just make one short correction. The Marie Drake Planetarium website is mariedrakeplanetarium.org. This last full moon, it was a penumbral lunar eclipse, but as the penumbral lunar eclipse is very difficult to see, the one that's easy to see is the umbral lunar eclipse, and that is not what happened this last full moon.
Tell us the difference between the two, please.
Well, the lunar eclipse is caused by the Earth's shadow, and the Earth's shadow, the inner part of the shadow, is the umbra, which is the dark part. And you can actually see the curvature of the Earth, which is a sphere, on the umbral part of the shadow, but the outer halo of the shadow is the penumbral. And the penumbral part of the Earth's shadow is very, very faint on the moon. And the moon just went through the penumbral part of the Earth's shadow. So that's very difficult to see. I looked for it, but I did not see it.
Okay. All righty. So Wednesday night is the talk, Christina De La Rosa's talk, Astronaut Humor. It is in UAS Egan Wing, room 112. At what time again?
At 7 p.m., and it is free, as are 99% of our shows.
And suitable for all ages.
Right.
And what's coming up at the planetarium? What's next?
Well, our regular show at the last Tuesday of the month at 6:30 will be October 29th, and that will be Ken Fix talking about Hermes and Mercury. So that's the Hermes, who is a god in mythology, Mercury, a planet, and he'll also talk about the messenger unmanned spacecraft that has been looking at Mercury, I guess, for about 3 years, our tax dollars at work.
Okay, then. All righty. Well, thank you so much for coming in, and maybe we'll talk next month before that Tuesday presentation.
Yeah, Ken will be interviewing for that.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks again.
Thank you, Joan and Jeff.
Thank you.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:45. You're listening on KTOO News. You can check it out on the web anytime. You can listen to the show anytime, any show on KTOO. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis. I'm your Monday host. And right now we have Bob Deering, who is the Tongass Biomass Coordinator, who is based out of Juneau, and Andrew Hayden of Wisewood, Inc. He's from Portland. He's a biomass project developer, and he's here. They're both here to talk about this event that JEDC is hosting. There is an event tomorrow at noon, and there's an event tomorrow night. So thank you guys for coming in today.
Hi, Joe.
Andrew, it's like this all the time in Juneau. It's gorgeous.
I've been telling him that, so he'll keep coming back.
That'd be good. So, Bob, let's talk about why is the Forest Service involved in biomass?
Well, because the Forest Service owns most of the biomass here in Southeast Alaska, we decided maybe we need to come up with a strategy for how to utilize all that energy that's growing on the hillsides around here. And so the Forest Service brought me on board to help develop a strategy for utilizing all this biomass energy that we have for the benefit of the communities in Southeast Alaska.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. What is biomass?
Biomass, for our purposes, is wood.
Okay.
Is wood energy. Could be cordwood, could be wood chips, could be wood pellets. But for our purposes, it's wood. In other cases, sometimes biomass could be things like grass, or it could be, you know, anything that's organic in nature, basically, that's not fossil fuels.
Okay. And why is biomass a good fit for Juneau?
Well,
is it a good fit for Juneau?
Biomass is a wonderful fit for Juneau. It complements hydropower very well. We've got basically two organic sources of renewable energy here in Juneau, Alaska, and here in Southeast. One is hydropower, which we're blessed with. Some communities, of course, in Southeast aren't blessed with that. And then we also have lots of biomass energy as well. Let's talk about hydropower real briefly. Hydro is our source of electricity. And electricity is a wonderful thing for running radio stations and computers and maybe electric cars and motors and mines. But it's probably not the best utilization of our electricity to make heat with it. Biomass is used for its best uses for making thermal energy, and that represents the largest amount of energy that's used in Juneau in our buildings is for heating our buildings. And we've got lots of biomass for producing that energy.
Right. So what would that look like? So if you're saying we have all this biomass to heat different structures in Juneau, how would that work?
Well, everybody's familiar with a wood stove, and that's a form of biomass. But if you want to see the kind of the next generation of biomass energy, come to our meeting tomorrow and then attend the tour of Juneau's advanced biomass boilers. We can come over and see the Sea Alaska building that has an advanced biomass pellet boiler. Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority just installed a pellet boiler as well in their headquarters out near the boiler, out near the brewery. And then we're going to visit the brewery as well, which is burning spent grain waste for running its heat processes in the brewery. So okay. that's what the new generation of biomass is going to look like.
Okay, and that's great that we have all those examples here in town. So let's talk a little bit about tomorrow. So it's 12 to 1 at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and the title of the event is Energy Solutions from Austria to Alaska, Biomass Heat Generation. Do you want to explain that, Andrew or Bob?
Well, we have Andrew from Portland coming up, who's a biomass expert with a lot of experience, and then colleagues from Austria are also in town. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to have these guys talk about their experiences from outside Southeast Alaska and what lessons could be brought to us here in this region.
Okay. So we're going to get into just a few more facts, and then we're going to ask Andrew, who is our expert from Portland here. So from 12 to 1, it's a talk. It's informational. And then from 1 to 4 is the tour.
Correct.
Is that correct? And then tomorrow night from 6 to 7 at the Mendenhall Library Meeting Room, there's another talk about saving money on heat, clean burning, renewable energy, and so on and so forth. So, Andrew, is this your first time in Juneau?
This is my second time.
Okay. So what do you think about the Juneau market for being a candidate for biomass?
Well, from my perspective, it looks great. I think you've got a lot of people burning a fair bit of oil for heating, which is both expensive and non-renewable. You've got a lot of people who want to do the right thing environmentally, and so biomass is a clean-burning, environmentally friendly alternative to heating oil. And now with the new technologies from Austria that are coming over, you've got the opportunity to utilize the resource in the most efficient way. And so I think, really, you have an excellent opportunity here in Juneau and throughout Southeast Alaska to convert to biomass.
Okay. And so the technology is coming from Austria? Is mm-hmm. that what you just
By
said?
By and large, Europe has done great things with it, more than just Austria, but Austria is the world leader and has been able to develop the technology to a level where it's basically plug and play, and from the user's perspective, from the homeowner's perspective or building owner's perspective, it's essentially functionally the same as natural gas or oil.
Wow. And then, so tell us a little bit about your company and what you do in Portland, or you're based in Portland.
I'm based in Portland, and we work throughout the Western United States and hopefully Alaska. We develop projects, so it's a new concept, so you have to really bring people along from looking at a project, is it feasible, and if it's so, yes, and then bringing together the engineering and then construction and all the way through to the project management to get a project done, at least in the commercial scale. In the residential scale, it's much more like an appliance, so it's quite easy to do a project just by buying the system. But for a community building or for a small district energy project, which is heating of multiple buildings from a single boiler, you need to really have somebody who's in charge from A to Z, and that's what I do.
Okay. So it seems that the majority of structures that are on the tour tomorrow are commercial, and then your home also, I'm pointing at Bob, but Bob, you have a biomass boiler in your home?
I'm just in the process of installing it right now, correct.
Okay. So what does that mean? You get a biomass boiler, and like, where did you get it? How does it differ from the boilers that are in most homes?
It's not so different from what I had, an oil boiler in my house. So I pulled the oil boiler out, and this is going into pretty much the same space that the oil boiler was. Size-wise, it's slightly larger, but not dramatically. And I need to set up a space to store wood pellets for the boiler to utilize as a fuel source. I've gotten rid of my oil tank. It was a happy day when that thing went out the door. And so for all intents and purposes, there's not a big difference except that I'm going to be paying a lot less per year for heating my house than I was with oil.
So you need to feed this boiler with pellets. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll have a bulk storage little room in my house, basically, a bin for pouring pellets into. Right now, we don't really have a pellet delivery truck like you have with the oil delivery trucks here. So I'll just buy, in my pickup truck, I'll just go to one of the pellet suppliers, Home Depot or Alaska Hearth Products or somebody else that's selling bags of pellets. And maybe once a month or so, I'll just dump some bags of pellets into the bin. It's not that big a deal. I could use the exercise.
And do you feed it like daily? Or?
Oh, no, it's just automatic. And Andrew can probably talk more about it than.
Yeah, so the bulk, the bin that Bob will have in his garage, in the corner of the garage, will hold a ton of pellets, and that should last about 2 months here in Juneau. So it's something he'll have to do 3-4 times a year at most. But once he's done it, it automatically feeds the boiler from the bin completely hands-free, no labor whatsoever, and does so on demand as required by the heating load of the house. So it's completely automated.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it actually uses a vacuum turbine to suck pellets from the bin to the boiler, and the bin can be up to 40 feet away from the boiler and still feed over to the boiler, and you can have amazing flexibility with where you store your pellets and where you have your boiler. So,
okay. So this sounds to me, it might not be, but it sounds to me like cutting-edge technology. Is that true? Would you use that word, both of you? I mean, like, is it in Portland, are there lots of people using biomass?
It's in the commercials. It's in Oregon. We've had a lot of success in the commercial and institutional markets. So schools, hospitals, and that type of thing tend to use a lot more energy. So they're more eager to find a cost reduction strategy. We have the benefit of having Austria having gone first, where this technology has developed over the last 15 years. And so instead of starting from scratch, we get to leapfrog ahead and utilize the very best world-class technology from day one. So I think that's the big benefit to having learned the lessons over first in Europe and bringing them over.
Okay. All right. Well, we're almost out of time. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Bob Deering, who's the Tongass Biomass Coordinator here in Juneau, and Andrew Hayden of Wisewood, Inc. from Portland. They're having a talk tomorrow from 12 to 1 at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and then they're taking a tour of the biomass boilers in town. Is that correct?
That's correct.
From 1 to 4. And then also they have a talk tomorrow night at the Mendenhall Library, and that's at 7 o'clock.
It's 6 o'clock at the Mendenhall Library. And the evening talk will be probably more focused on the residential market, whereas the talk at noon will be focused a little bit more maybe for policymakers, facility managers, city and state officials, folks that on more on the commercial scale.
Right, but anyone could go on the tour if they're interested, because it just sounds really interesting. Anybody
can come to either one of the presentations. Anybody can come on the tours as well. Everybody's welcome.
Okay, and then I'm just going to digress for 1 second. So you said there's not a pellet truck coming by like our oil trucks right now. Do you think that's something that's going to happen in the future, that there'll be like pellet trucks coming by?
Yes.
They are both nodding like...
It's
completely, it's happening.
It's going to happen. But for the time being, I can dump bags of pellets without any problem. It's a little tougher if you had a hand dump buckets of oil into your tank. So it's not that big of a deal for the interim.
I'm not really trying to make it like a big deal that you have to go get the pellets. I'm just trying to figure out how it works.
Well, what we're trying to do is find the critical mass of people who are interested in the technology, willing to go first. And we're having great success. Everybody we're meeting so far has shown a lot of interest, and we're starting to see a real activity on the market. So we think in not too long from now, there'll be a critical mass of customers that makes it affordable and economically feasible to buy that truck and to deliver the pellets in bulk.
Right, but when there's a need.
Exactly, demand first.
When there's a need. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in.
You
thank
bet.
You.
Very welcome.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're going to wrap it up for today. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm going to be sitting in for Pat on Friday. We've got a great show, Ray Troll, among other people, on Friday. So let's talk about the weather. So now the weather forecast is decreasing clouds, slight chance of rain tonight. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. Tomorrow night, rain likely. Wednesday, rain, highs around 48. Wednesday night, rain likely. Thursday, mostly cloudy. Thursday night, cloudy. Friday and Friday night, rain likely. And then rains and clouds right through the weekend. Tomorrow, Martha Moore is the host for Juno Afternoon at 3 p.m. She'll be talking with Mark Whitman about his historical presentation, The Birch Brothers. David Otteson from Rainbow Foods will be here with the details about the film GMO-OMG, showing Wednesday at the Goldtown Theater. You'll hear about this Friday's KXLL Zombie Walk and get details about the upcoming JDHS presentation of Almost Maine. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to hear the show or any other show on K2, you can check it out at ktoo.org. Have a great day.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K2